last week, I think just after that Monsanto protest where I led the fracker and was doing the operatic thing, my voice really, really terrible, man. And like that weekend, I was just totally wiped out and virtually wiped out for the whole week afterwards as well. And I was really behind on my archiving and editing and all of this kind of stuff. And yesterday I took the day off. So that I could finish all that archiving and everything and stop feeling like crap. So all of the new archives are up there now, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Right up the top there it says Radio Archives, and you can get all of those there, as well as the commercial-free versions for subscribers. So if you subscribe to me, I'll send you the links to the ad-free archives pages there for as little as $1 a month, ladies and gentlemen. Some people do 20, and some people do more, but as little as $1 a month, and we'll give you some commercial-free archives. Very, very handy little tool to have there. Saves you a lot of listening time, and also that irritating spot where you're like, oh, I don't want to listen to the ads, so you have to, you know, skip through like 6 times an episode. Who wants to do that? Why not just have me edit all the ads out for you and give you some money? Now, my very special guest, Eugene Sonny Ehrman. And we were talking over the break, me and the producer Adam, about ecstasy, empathy, and psychopathy, right? And I always wondered, is it possible to make a psychopath feel empathy? And I was thinking, what would a kind of drug induced state would you have to actually impose on these type of people, creatures, whatever you think that they are, in order to actually make them feel the pain that they're doing to other people? And I recall that the original translation, the reason why it was called E, wasn't to mean ecstasy. It was actually to mean empathy. And way back in the day, when it was prescribed by doctors, it was given to violent fathers, and they sent them home to their kids. They never lay a hand on them again. And so naturally, because it was so effective at stopping the family unit breakdown in violence, they made it illegal. So imagine if you actually gave this type of a drug to a psychopath. Could you artificially induce real human empathy and make them see the consequences for their actions for once? I don't know what the answer to that is, but it'd be interesting to find out. Eugene, are you still there?
I am. Well, yeah, I'm sure I have visions in my head of these guys, dosing too much Molly and sitting there and having a spiritual awakening. That would be brilliant.
Yeah, you can imagine what kind of a conflict it might start up within somebody if they suddenly realize, oh my god, I'm a psychotic piece of crap. What have I done to people?
Yeah, we can only hope, huh?
Yeah, I mean, hey, well, here's a terrorist operation for you. This is theoretically speaking. I remember a scene from L.E.G. In the House, where there was this big UN conference thing going on, and everybody was like getting angry and out of control over this little African country conflict, and Russia and the United States were going at it and stuff like that. And so what LEG does is he spikes their tea with huge quantities of weed, and all of a sudden the conflict is called off and they start dancing. So what if you dose the entire Congress and the Senate and the White House with a decent quantity of ecstasy? You know, what would happen? Would the country suddenly be like, oh my god, we're taxing people for no reason, we're killing innocent babies, man, what are we doing? Let's stop it all, man, let's bring the troops home and stuff. Be classic. And of course, they'd have to be really wasted off their nut in order to stop doing what they're doing, wouldn't they? Because this is what they do when they're sober.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, maybe we could see, maybe we could bypass the fulfillment of what we were discussing before the break, in that, you know, the Third World War was laid out by this guy, Albert Pike, in 1860, I can't forget, 67 or whatever, that, you know, the plan that they were going to try to execute was to turn the Muslims, the Jews, and the Christians all against one another, have them basically do themselves in, and then usher in their, you know, one world system, which is ultimately at the core Luciferianism. I mean, you know, it's right there in black and white that the god of Freemasonry is Lucifer. So, you know, if you're a lower level Mason and you feel that that's not true, let me tell you something. My dad was a freaking pilot for George Bush Sr., and I think I know what I'm talking about. Okay, go look up Moral and Dogma for yourself and look it up for yourself and just take it for what it is. And so, you know, I think that my point is that we're clearly seeing that agenda, you know, coming to fruition today all across the globe. And, you know, a house that's divided will not stand, and ultimately forgiveness and compassion and empathy, not only for those that we love and for those that we're at odds with, just in the traditional sense, that's not, you know, these evil, basically technocrats out there running everything today, they need to be extended this type of forgiveness as well, and it's very important. And I know, you know, that's a difficult thing to wrap your mind around, and I don't intend to, in any form or fashion, to sound as a proponent for any of the things that they've, you know, implemented out there with this agenda that they clearly have to soft kill us and lead us to a slaughter. And I don't, you know, it doesn't need to be taken that way. Take me out of context there. But, you know, what do we do with this stuff, guys? I mean, what is the answer? Is what we all, you know, it's raising awareness. It's having action behind our works and educating ourselves and ultimately understanding the power that we have as a human organism. And, you know, something that I would like to note, and something that has to kind of do with another area of my research, which is very important, also has to do with some prophetic things that are written in the book of Revelation and the Bible. And I think that it's very important. It's very interesting, and there seems to be a very strong affirmation that this stuff is real. And how John of Patmos knew this stuff, you know, almost 2,000 years ago, is utterly fascinating and something that needs to be reckoned with in anybody's worldview, okay? And to kind of put things in context, I'll start with a device that was the first quantifying data collection system on planet Earth, which was called the Hollerith machine, developed by IBM, ultimately, okay? And there has been many, many attempts to bring IBM in front of a war crimes tribunal for crimes against humanity because of the fact that they solicited this device to the Nazis in 1938, okay? And you may have never heard of it until now, and that's how good they are at sweeping this stuff under the rug. And please listen carefully and do your own research about this, because this is a historical fact on the world in which you live, and it affects each and every person who will ever hear this broadcast, okay?
Well, the Nazis had great business ties with America. I mean, the Luftwaffe, the Air Force, couldn't get off the ground without U.S. Standard Oil patented technologies. Coca-Cola was banned from trading with them under the Trading with the Enemy Act, so they created Fanta, the Nazi drink. And IBM sold them all the punch card systems so that they could orderly, easily catalog and chronicle all the slave Jews that they had.
That's right. And that device was known as the Hollerith machine. It was solicited to the Nazis, and it did exponentially increase the rate in which they could catalog, identify, and thus decimate the Jews to the tune of over 6 million people who basically sat there and waited for a knock on their door, okay? And that current type of technology and agenda has been refined to the present day. And, you know, there's a subsidiary of IBM known as Verichip, which already has FDA approval and one of the commercials is actually for release in Australia down there in the land down under, in which, you know, there's a guy running through a store and the music's blaring and it looks like he's shoplifting stuff. That's the impression that they're trying to give you, because he's just running through the store, grabbing stuff, putting it in his coat, concealing it, and he just runs through the checkout line. The music stops. There's a security guard there who had been watching him throughout the entire, you know, the video, and everything stops, and the security guard goes, "Hey, you know, did you forget something?" And he just simply hands him a receipt, and that's because there's a chip in him which is coupled with the system known as the World Wide Web. And let me try to put this stuff into context for you, okay? In Revelation chapter 13, There is what we call the mark of the beast. And no man shall buy, sell, or trade without the mark of the beast. He who has wisdom calculate the number of the beast. The number of a man, this number is 666. Okay? Every time we swipe a card at the store today, okay, it's ultimately validated by one network, which was created by DARPA. That's the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, in which I've had dealings with basically my entire life. Okay? And that system is the World Wide Web. Okay? The word mark in Greek, in which these scriptures were written in, means two things. It means to etch or prick into the skin and a badge of servitude. Okay? Now picture this little chip. They're going to couple it with this system known as the World Wide Web. Let me tell you what the sixth letter of the Hebrew alphabet is. Okay? It's VA, or W in English, which therefore means that WWW has a numeric value of 666. No man shall buy, sell, or trade without the mark of the beast, which will be coupled with this, you know, the chip will be coupled with this system, the one world system, in which in the future, the sole conduit for the transmission of this system will be what is called fiber optics, okay? And fiber optic technology, if you do the research, and certainly people like Whitley Strieber and lots of people out there would agree that fiber optic technology came from a particular species of gray alien. Okay, we grew by leaps and bounds with this technology. And again, you know, I have a tendency to upload, you know, sensitive documents from DARPA and other military, you know, websites and official, you know, university websites to my Facebook page. By the, you know, well over 1,000 of them have been uploaded to my page to the present day. And one of the things that anybody can go look up, you know, type in DARPA and CAPS, that's D-A-R-P-A, in a Google search engine, and then put fiber optics and then put a dot mil after it and see what you get. Maybe type in an AT&T or any telecom company in there, and you'll find that that really will be the sole conduit for all transmissions in the future, which will be coupled with the chip that they're going to try to put into you, okay? And the reason that that's relevant, okay, is because in Revelation chapter 15, there's the seven deadly, there's the seven angels with the seven deadly plagues, and then there's the group of people that have victory over the name, the number, and the image of the beast, and they stand atop a sea of glass mingled with fire, okay? And my personal perspective is that's exactly what we're doing here today, because the sea of glass mingled with fire in which those victory, the group of, that has victory over these things is standing atop on is fiber optics. A fiber optic cable is basically a glass tube with a laser that goes through it at the speed of light in which it glows like it's on fire, okay? That, and how John of Patmos would have tried to make that relevant and put things into context, given what he knew all those years ago, and to try to convey that message into the present, is illustrated in Revelation chapter 15. And how that was known is fascinating, okay? And so the worshiping the image of the beast is, you know, having the creative ability that you possess seeded with negativity in order to manifest materialism, narcissism, the negative aspects of greed, lust, and all the deadly sins that are out there, and that's how we worship the image of the beast, is using our creative ability to manifest things into this reality, as our abilities in that area are heightened in this current and present age in which we're in. You know, we've just reached an extremity of what's known as the Great Year amongst astronomers, which is a cycle that the Earth's axis is shifting 1 degree every 72 years, and it changes our relative viewpoints to the heavens. And this was known by the ancients as far back as Egypt, which is also illustrated in the Old Testament in that, you know, Moses was privy to this knowledge because he grew up in a pharaonic priesthood in the, you know, in Egypt, as the story of Moses goes, and he wrote the word Ram, which is the age in which those books that he wrote was written. He wrote those books in the age of the Ram. He put the word shofar in the Old Testament 72 times, as anybody who would be able to decipher that later on, given this knowledge, would be able to ascertain. And we're just now being able to understand the processional cycle in and of itself. It's a cycle of time which takes 25,920 years. Okay, and then you know, we've just reached one extremity of that cycle on the shortest day of last year. It's got the planets out of whack. It's, you know, and it's my contention that the, you know, Herculobus and the Bureau or Planet X, whatever you call it, the cycle of these extra planets, you know, the planets that are out of our solar system that come in on a recurring cycle are actually the catalyst that creates this precessional cycle in and of itself. Mathematically, it all lines up there. As it comes in, it makes our planets basically wobble back and forth. There's a few other variables there with gravity and everything. But, you know, the most important thing that I would really try to say for any human being to understand is to understand what happens when you're dreaming. And we'll pick up there. It's very important.
All right. Well, when we come back from break, ladies and gentlemen, we'll talk about what happens when you're dreaming, I guess. So hopefully you won't fall asleep during the ad break. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen.